Okay, so I think we can start this evening's talk. And the talk tonight is going to be on mindfulness. And the reason I spoke to Ajahn Brahm when he came back from a conference that he went to in Sydney. This conference is called, you may have heard about it, it's known as Mind and Its Potential. And it's an annual conference that they have in Sydney. And basically the purpose of this conference is to explore the mind and the possibilities of the mind. And one of the things which often come up on these kind of conferences is this topic of mindfulness. It is explored not only in Buddhism, but also in science. Lots of people in science who try to understand what this mindfulness is and how it actually can do something beneficial for you in your life, how it can help you control your moods, how it can help you overcome problems in your life, how it can has all these beneficial and therapeutic effects, this thing of mindfulness. So that was why they have this conference, this annual conference in Sydney. A lot of the people who go there are people who are scholars and researchers, many of them from the United States. And they talk about mindfulness in all these different kinds of ways. But then I asked Ajahn Brahm, anybody talk about the conditions, the causes that actually give rise to mindfulness in life? And he said, nobody talked about the causes and conditions that give rise to mindfulness. And it occurred to me that this would be a very good topic for a talk, to actually talk about what is it that actually gives rise to mindfulness. Because I suspect the reason why people don't talk about the cause and conditions for mindfulness is because often people assume that mindfulness is all about practice. As long as you keep practicing mindfulness, as long as you do your best to actually be mindful in daily life, that is what actually will make your mindfulness stronger. Just by trying to do so, you will actually become more mindful. And the answer to that question, is that actually the case? And I think there is some truth to that. Of course, you have to try a little bit. But it can only take you so far. In fact, if you try very hard to be mindful, but you haven't put in the causes and conditions for mindfulness to arise, you will often find yourself getting very tense and very uptight. It's like you go on retreat, always trying to force yourself to be mindful, and you can't really relax properly. You can't really sit still. You don't feel at ease with yourself because of the effort and the will that you're putting in to trying to be mindful. So what is missing there? Why don't you feel at ease? Why don't you feel that sense of just being in the present moment without forcing it, without actually pushing yourself to be in the present moment? And the reason is because you haven't put the causes and the conditions into place for being mindful there. Of course, this is one of the wonderful things about Buddhism, apart from science, is that Buddhism talks a lot about cause and conditions. We talk about a path, a gradual training, which goes step by step towards a goal. And a lot of that path, a large part of that path, is precisely about putting in the right causes and conditions for the desired results to arise. If you don't put in the right causes and conditions, the desired results will not arise. If you put them in, then the results will arise. And this is a beautiful aspect of the Buddha's teaching, this idea of causality, one thing leading to next, gradually, step by step, leading towards the goal, whatever that goal may be, ultimately maybe enlightenment, but many, many sub-goals before you get to that point. So this is the strength of the Buddhist teachings, and for that reason, I think it is very important to bring this thing up. So that is the first thing I want to talk about. The second thing I want to talk about is, well, what is the purpose of mindfulness? Why are we going to try to be mindful in the first place? And the answer to that question is, of course, first of all, there is an inherent happiness about being mindful. When you're mindful, you feel good, you feel at peace, you feel at ease, you feel good about yourself, because your mind is not running back and forth, you're in the present moment. There's a sense of tranquility there. There's a beautiful thing about us being mindful there. So that, of course, is already a very good reason. But the point about being mindful is much more than just having a pleasant present moment. The purpose is also that mindfulness in itself is a step on the path. So mindfulness is not just something which you want to do in its own right, and it's great in its own right, so you certainly should do that just for itself. But it's also itself a step towards something more. And what is that something more? that you are practicing towards? Why is it that we want to be mindful? What is the next step on that path? Where does it lead, this mindfulness? And that is the other thing I want to talk about. So mindfulness is sort of in the middle there. It has its causes and conditions. And then that in itself becomes the cause and condition for something else on this path. So those two things are going to be my main topics this evening. But before I even get started on those topics, I just want to talk briefly about what is mindfulness. This word mindfulness is a kind of a strange word. And I think it was coined only quite recently. And it was coined precisely to be used in this Buddhist sense by the early Buddhist scholars about 100 years ago. And of course, what it essentially means, for those of you who have been Buddhists for a while who know about these teachings, the essential meaning of mindfulness is present moment awareness. You're in the present moment. Your mind is not running off into the future, not thinking about the past, not fantasizing about this and that. But you're here in the present moment. And as I said before, just that much, just being in the present moment is a wonderful feeling, not having the mind running around all over the place. It has a sense of peace and tranquility and beauty about it. And you feel so much better about yourself just for having that mindfulness in your life. Not always, but at least some of the time. So mindfulness is this beautiful sense of being here and now. The wonderful thing about it, the other wonderful thing about that, is it gives you a sense of power. When you are at home, when you are here, you're looking around you, you feel in a sense that you have a power inside of yourself. It's almost as if you're not dragged around by the things of the past, things of the future, not dragged around by your senses, because the senses tend to make us have desires or aversion towards things. But because you are strongly inside of yourself, aware of what's going around you, here, present, you can actually choose your reactions to the events around you. So there's a sense of power there, a sense of fulfillment, a sense that the world cannot just do as it wishes with you, but you are in charge. And that is a great thing in Buddhism. This is like a sense of restraint, that you don't allow the world around you to boss you around, but you have a sense of fulfillment, of independence, in a sense, from the world around you. That's a beautiful thing which happens. Another aspect of mindfulness is that it also relates to memory. So for those of you who think you have a bad memory, it's great to be able to practice mindfulness because it leads to a much more powerful memory for yourself. And you will find that the reason for that, the reason why mindfulness and memory are so strongly connected is, of course, if you are here, if you're present, if you are aware of what's happening around you, rather than just drifting off everywhere, things will tend to make much more impact on you. And then they will really stick in your mind. Instead of being half present, halfway somewhere else, your mind is fully here, and things make a full and really good, strong impact on you. For that reason, it's much more easy to recall these things again in the future. So that is why the memory aspect is important part of this thing we call mindfulness. But there's also another thing about mindfulness, and that is what you find when you read the suttas, the discourses of the Buddha. This idea of mindfulness almost always goes together with a sense of wisdom. In other words, if you have mindfulness, you also have wisdom to a certain degree. You're not there talking about the really, really profound wisdoms, the kind of wisdoms which are about enlightenment, of course, but it's a kind of lesser wisdom. It's a wisdom of just knowing roughly what is right and what is wrong, and what works and what doesn't work. It's called clear comprehension if you read the discourses of the Buddha. And you will find that if you are mindful, if you're present, if you're really aware, often what will happen if you have a problem or somebody else comes to you with a problem, you will very often, almost intuitively know the answer to that. It's almost as if you have something inside of you which guides you almost automatically and says, that is the solution to that. Everything becomes much more clear to you. And of course, I think, of course, wisdom is probably one reason why so many of us are interested in Buddhism or are Buddhists, because wisdom is such a beautiful quality. Who doesn't want to be wise in this world? And this is like the first step to wisdom, when your mind is present, clear and aware, the starting point of wisdom. And the other aspect of the wisdom which comes with mindfulness is that you have a wisdom also about meditation practice. Suddenly you know how to meditate, you know what you need to do, you know where the defilements are, you know where you shouldn't step with your mind, you know where to attend rightly, where not to attend. And you know how to watch the breath, for example, if you do breath meditation. You know how to do the loving kindness, because the mind is clear. It is very obvious to you what is right and what is wrong in what we work. So for that reason, the mindfulness becomes this powerful platform to enable you to meditate properly. So if you can give rise to this mindfulness more and more in your daily life, you will find that the meditation will improve dramatically. And when you go on retreat, if you do go on retreats, you will again find that it becomes so much easier for you because your mindfulness is powerful. So this wisdom faculty becomes stronger when you are mindful there. So that is just a rough guide to what mindfulness means when it comes from the Buddha, what he said about it in the suttas, at least some of those things. He said much more about this. But now, next thing I want to do, I want to talk now about the causes of mindfulness. As I said before, if all you do to try to be mindful is always push yourself, always force yourself to be mindful in daily life, you can often end up getting uptight, uncomfortable, not feeling relaxed. And that is exactly the opposite of what we want. We want to be comfortable. We want to be relaxed. It should be a kind of a natural mindfulness, a mindfulness which arises and you feel comfortable and good with it. And then it becomes something very valuable and very good in your life, something which you really would understand the benefits of, because it's very clear that this is something positive, something nice, something that feels good. So how do we do this? And the answer is, of course, as usual, it's very easy in Buddhism. Buddhism, all the answers are pretty much the same. So what should we be doing? And the answer, of course, is we should be good. We should be kind. We should be moral. We should be virtuous people. Because that virtue, that goodness, that kindness will lead to a sense of mindfulness. Mindfulness comes from goodness. If you are good, you will naturally be mindful. If you are not good, you will tend not to be mindful. Why is that? Why is it that goodness leads to mindfulness? And I think it is important to understand the psychological links, why something leads to something else. Because if you understand the why of something, it's much easier to have faith that this actually is correct. If somebody says this is the way it is, okay, maybe it is true, maybe it's not. But if you can understand yourself what the link is, it often makes much more sense. So the way this works, and this is one of, again, this is taken from the Buddha's word in his discourses. He said that if you do things which are immoral, are not virtuous, are not kind, you're not being good to other beings, other people around you, say things which you shouldn't be saying, you do things which you shouldn't be doing, then it is accordance with nature, says the Buddha, that you will have remorse. You're going to have some kind of conscience coming up saying, I did what was wrong here. And you will feel inside of you, something will happen inside of you where you won't feel as good about yourself as you otherwise would. There will be a slight darkening of the mind, a grayness in the mind, something which destroys that natural brightness which is there if you are fully virtuous. And the Buddha said this is in accordance with nature. This is not something we can control. You can't just push away these things or bury them with some kind of will or some kind of power of the mind. You will feel these negative feelings if you do things which are not moral. It is the way things are. And of course, if your mind is not feeling 100% good, if there's a bit of darkness there, if there's a discomfort because you feel remorse or you feel a sense of conscience, bad conscience of what you have done, it will not be nice to be with that mind. If it's not nice to be with the mind, you will tend to seek refuge in the past, in the future, in fantasy, somewhere, but not the present moment. Yes, you can maybe force your mind to be present in the present moment for a while there, but after a while, the mind will always try to escape, because the present moment is not as beautiful and as nice as it could have been if you had been living a good life. So this is the mechanism, this is why it is so important to avoid doing bad things, because you don't want to spoil the mind. You don't want to spoil the mind with these things which are painful to watch, painful to be with. You want to keep the mind pure and not damage your possibility of being in the present moment. And of course, there's also the converse of that. The converse is that if you do bad, then you feel a sense of remorse. You get a darkness in your mind, a negativity in your mind. There's also the converse. If you do good, if you do what is right, if you do well in life, then the opposite will happen. Instead of having remorse, you will feel a sense of ease. You feel a sense of goodness inside of yourself. You feel that you are happy. You feel that there is something bright and beautiful inside of you. And this is an aspect of Buddhism which sometimes people forget about. And that is that being virtuous, keeping precepts, is not just about avoiding the negative. It's also about doing the positive. And this is very important to remember, because sometimes it isn't talked about all that much. And when you read the way that the Buddha taught these precepts in his discourses, he said that we avoid doing the bad, so we avoid killing living beings. But not only do you avoid killing living beings, you also have compassion towards living beings at the same time. So it's like avoiding the negative and also doing the positive side of that thing. So there's a beautiful complementary thing there. Same thing with speech. Not only do we not use harsh speech, but in fact we try instead to use gentle speech. As the Buddha said, speech which goes to the heart, speech which is pleasant to the many people, that many people like to hear, which goes in and they feel pleasure listening at, because it's gentle, it's beautiful speech. So avoid the harsh and do the gentle speech. Avoid the divisive speech which pulls people apart, where you talk about negatively about one person to somebody else. And instead, speak speech which leads to harmony, which leads to a sense of community among people, which brings people together and gives you a feeling that a sense of goodness between people. And that is a positive side of the divisive speech, harmonious speech, which brings people together. So in all these precepts that we follow, there's always a positive side. And that positive side is what we should try to develop much more in our life. And when you develop that positive side, not only do you avoid the darkness or the grayness and the tiredness of a mind which is negative because of all the bad things you have done, but you also brighten up your mind. You make, turn up the lights inside of your mind, and something beautiful starts to happen inside of you. And then when you live your daily life, your mind is beautiful and bright, you feel good about yourself, you feel good inside. You've got this home inside of yourself where it's nice to be, nice to rest, nice to hang out. And if you've got this beautiful home inside of you, well, that's where you want to stay. You want to stay in that home within you. You don't want to run off into the future, run off into the past, run off into fantasy land. But you're happy in the here and now. Happy with what is happening inside of you. And you can see that when you're happy in the here and now, of course, you're going to be mindful there. You're going to feel good. You're going to feel there's something positive in your life. You feel really powerfully in the present moment. So this is how mindfulness comes about. Mindfulness comes about by making a beautiful mind within yourself. And then it comes naturally here, because you don't want to go anywhere else. And there is yet another aspect to this, which goes even deeper. And that is, of course, one thing is about doing the right in actions of body and actions of speech. But also, if you want to make mindfulness really, really powerful, you're also going to have to look at the actions of mind. And of course, the most important of these actions of mind is to avoid getting angry and upset, getting negative about things around you. That is the most important aspect of the avoiding negative actions in the mind. And again, if you get angry and upset, you always feel a little bit bad afterwards. If you act on something, you do something while you're angry, you wonder afterwards, well, did I do the right thing or did I not do the right thing? Because when you're angry, it's sometimes very hard to know what is right and what is wrong, because your mind is distorted by that anger. How do we know that mind is distorted by anger? It's very easy, because after you do something wrong while you're angry, afterwards you regret it. But while you were angry, it seemed like the right thing to do, right? So there's a distortion there while you're angry. And you can only understand afterwards that there was a distortion there while you were angry. So the point is, don't try to avoid anger altogether. If you can avoid anger altogether, then that is actually much, much better than getting angry. It's a small fault. Being angry is not a big fault compared to acting in a bad way or saying wrong things. It's much smaller. But still, if you want to really purify mindfulness, it's much better to avoid anger altogether. Of course, you're not going to be completely successful in that. Living in the world, there's always going to be problems. It's very hard to overcome anger completely. So don't put the bar too high, otherwise you're going to set yourself up for disappointment. But try gradually and slowly to see if you can perceive things in a different way, to overcome that negativity and anger which arises from time to time. And if you can do that, well, then you're really on the way for mindfulness to become even much, much stronger than it was before. Of course, one way which the Buddha recommends for overcoming anger is doing loving-kindness meditation. So do some loving-kindness if you have a chance to sit in meditation for 5-10 minutes every day even. It doesn't have to be longer. Sometimes people try to stretch themselves too far and then they give up. Do 10 minutes every day. If you can do more, great. If you can't, then 10 minutes is already a very good start. And spend that time doing a bit of compassion and loving kindness for the world. And then if you start the day in that way and maybe you end the day with a loving kindness and compassion in your heart, then gradually, step by step, you're going to move away from reacting with anger, reacting with negativity, and reacting with irritation to those things which often tend to arouse those kind of feelings in one. If you can do that, then, boy, mindfulness is going to become very, very strong. And you will see that when mindfulness becomes that strong, of course, there's a feedback mechanism. When mindfulness becomes very strong, you are able to catch yourself getting angry, getting strong desires even. You're able to catch yourself very fast. And when you catch yourself fast, you can turn your attention in a different direction and avoid getting that angry mind state in the first place. And then you are in it's like a feedback mechanism where the mindfulness reduces your defilements, and the defilements, in turn, because they're not there, strengthens your mindfulness. So one thing feeding the other. So that is the path to becoming mindful. And this is the real way of becoming mindful. Of course, when you go on retreat, you also try your best. You sometimes do your best to be mindful. But you will notice that year by year, month by month, if you practice in this way, and every time, next time you go on retreat, your mindfulness should be more powerful than it was last time. So that is the causes and the conditions for mindfulness. The second thing I want to talk about is, well, why do we even want to be mindful? Okay, fair enough. It is a happy state. You feel good about yourself. You feel peaceful and tranquil. And that, of course, is very welcome in its own right. And it's plenty sufficient reason to be mindful. But in fact, there's, of course, much more than that. It's not just the pleasure of being mindful, but it is the fact that mindfulness in itself brings you to another level, another step on the path. And what I was mentioning before is that when you have that mindfulness, there is a natural wisdom in your mind. And because you have that wisdom, you have the ability to meditate. For the first time, you really, really can meditate. That mindfulness enables the meditation to actually work because you understand the defilements of the mind. You understand how they arise, how they don't arise, and you understand how you should be watching that meditation object so it actually gives rise to peace, to quiet, and to all those states that we're trying to achieve in meditation practice. So meditation suddenly becomes possible. And of course, one of the big meditation things that we always talk about in Buddhism is the thing called the focuses of mindfulness. The satipatthana is the Pali word for it. It is a focus on mindfulness because it is where you put your mindfulness, where you use this mindfulness that you develop in daily life. So when you have developed that mindfulness, then meditation, satipatthana practice is possible. How do we practice satipatthana? How do we focus that mindfulness? And sometimes the way satipatthanas are explained, I find they're explained in a very difficult and inaccessible way. It's hard to really understand. But one of the main teachings of the Buddha about how to practice satipatthana is simply to be watching the breath. That way you can actually fulfill the satipatthana practice 100% just by doing breath meditation. And of course, breath meditation is something the Buddha taught in many, many different cases, many different discourses. It's like the most important, probably, of all the meditation subjects that the Buddha taught is watching the breath. And that is why it is often taught around the world. Wherever you go, you find the breath meditation being very powerful. And not only is it powerful, but it actually fulfills this thing called satipatthana. It takes you all the way through satipatthana practice. You don't have to worry about how should I watch feelings, how should I watch the mind, what should I be doing. All you have to do is watch the breath. What incredible relief that is, and how simple it makes this whole meditation aspect. And then while you watch the breath, you find that feelings come up, mind states come up, all these things arise, which are part of the focuses of mindfulness. All these things come up anyway, and that's why watching the breath fulfills all these things. And of course, as you all probably, many of you know, is of course the purpose of breath meditation, ultimately, is to get the mind to be concentrated, to get into these deep states of meditation, known as samadhi, even deeper, the jhana states. This is the purpose. This is why we do breath meditation. And while you practice this breath meditation, these states tend to happen. So now you can start to understand why you want to be mindful, the purpose of mindfulness. Purpose is, once you're mindful, you know how to meditate. Because you know how to meditate, you will have success in that meditation, and you will therefore be able to reach samadhi. You will be able to reach those deep states that are, of course, one of the very first points in our life as Buddhists, where we really start to understand what is going on. And this leads to the conclusion that the purpose of mindfulness is samadhi. It is concentration of the mind. And this is a powerful thing to understand, because usually, you will hear things like, well, mindfulness is about insight, it's about understanding things as they actually are. But initially, the main purpose of mindfulness initially is not that. Initially, the main purpose is to be able to meditate and to get into these states of concentration that we're all trying to get into. That is the main purpose of mindfulness. That's a powerful, powerful understanding there. And you will see that when you read the discourses of the Buddha, you will see, for example, the Noble Eightfold Path. It is graduated. It's a step-by-step path leading from one factor to the next. And you see towards the end of that path, you see there is right mindfulness, samma sati, satipatthana. That's the second last factor on the Noble Eightfold Path. And that leads to samma samadhi, concentration, jhanas, this deep state of meditation that we're all seeking to attain. So it is basically, this is all over the suttas, this idea that mindfulness leads to concentration. It's not just my idea, it's taken directly from the discourses of the Buddha. And it is a very important thing to understand. And of course, once you have that samadhi, once you have that concentration of mind, then when you come out, then your mindfulness will be much, much more powerful. And it's only at that point that you will be able to penetrate even deeper and understand those real truths that we're trying to understand in Buddhism. But the first goalpost in Buddhism is always to attain a state of concentration. And that is the purpose of the mindfulness that we're trying to have, is to attain that concentration on the path. So that is the purpose of mindfulness. Okay. I think probably that is all I want to say actually about mindfulness today. Yeah. So I think I will actually stop the talk there. Yeah. So if you have any questions or comments or anything you want to add to what I said, this is your chance. Any question is acceptable. Yeah. Okay. Well, basically mindfulness is just being in the present moment. So mindfulness does not in its own right have any focus. It's just present moment awareness. So whatever comes into your senses at that point will become the object of that mindfulness. And of course that is where the, that is why that is not sufficient, because being mindful, there's still lots of things going on, there's still many things happening around you, mind can still, is not perfectly still and perfectly peaceful, but it is the foundation stone for being able to focus that mind. So all you have to do when you become really mindful is put your mind on the meditation object, and then it will focus with relative ease compared to a mind which is not mindful. So that is, yeah, it's an important point. And that is, of course, why the stillness of that mindfulness which you have before concentration is not that powerful, because it is still disturbed. You still have many objects in it. It's not something which is really focused. And whereas the mindfulness which you have when you come out of samadhi is going to be very powerful, because it's based on that stillness of the mind that you have in samadhi. So samadhi, concentration, is the focus. And mindfulness is really only the present moment awareness. Does that answer your question? Okay, yeah. Well, I think the point is that, you know, once you get to good mindfulness, there already isn't that much will there. Already at the point when the mind is really mindful, you're really presently aware in the present moment, already there isn't going to be much will, because you're feeling pretty relaxed about things. If there is a lot of will, that's when you're forcing mindfulness, you're holding it in the present moment. So there's a natural ease. With good mindfulness, there's a natural ease there. And that's why it works so well to watch the breath. That's why it, you know, you focus so well, because you have an ease there already. And of course, that ease grows even greater, as you say, when you focus the mind. And certainly, you don't lose that present moment awareness when you focus the mind. In fact, it becomes more powerful, it becomes stronger. This is one of the things about the path. You know, with each path factor, you fulfill one factor, you go to the next one. When you fulfill the higher factor, the lower one also gets stronger. This is one of the laws of this, of practicing the path. So as your concentration increases, all the previous factors of the path are going to become more powerful. So, which of course includes mindfulness. But it also includes virtue, it also includes right view, and it also includes things like intentions. So everything becomes more powerful, more pure, and better. So certainly, you don't lose your mindfulness, and you become even more at ease as you concentrate. Yes, sir. Okay, Yonisomanasikara, wise attention. Okay. Well, I think that, you know, wise attention is, it has, I think it has very many levels to it, you know, and it starts off at a very early point in the path. Wise attention already, when you decide that you're going to be virtuous, that's already a wise attention in a sense, because you have understood that virtue is necessary. You have understood the benefits of being virtuous and kinder. So you already have a sense of wise attention when you start off on the path and you do the right thing, yeah? But of course, that wise attention, as you practice the path, like with everything else, it becomes more wise, you know? In the beginning, there may not be much wisdom there, but as your mindfulness increases, that wise attention becomes wiser, wiser and wiser and wiser as you move along, yeah? And when you get to the point of you have your mindfulness is very strong, yeah? At that point, your wise attention is good enough to be able to, for your meditation to really take off. And then, as you progress on the path, as your wise attention will become stronger and stronger, more and more powerful, more and more wisdom in it, to the point where, after you come out of samadhi, you can actually direct your mind towards, you know, the real truths of Buddhism about non-self and suffering in the world. And at that point, the wise attention can actually penetrate those truths. So there's a whole scale of wise attention. It starts from the very beginning, takes you from the beginning all the way to the end of the path. And wise attention goes all the way through that. Any further comments? Yes, sir. true. Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I think you're right there. And that's why I also said that, you know, it is important to actually try to overcome the aversions and angers during the day, because it will actually enhance your practice a lot if you can do that. But it is difficult. And that is why it's important not to set your goals too high. If you set your goals too high, you're going to be incredibly disappointed. I know people get depressed. One of the reasons why people get depressed is because they don't think they're good enough. They're not able to live up to their own goals and their own kind of ideas about what they should be like. So as I think it's important for a Buddhist or somebody who wants to practice this path, not to say that, you know, I shouldn't be angry, I must not be angry. And when you can't do it, you get really negative and you feel even worse about it. You get angry at the anger and on it goes, you know, it gets worse and worse. So instead of doing that, you have to find that middle way whereby you accept, okay, I'm a human being, I'm going to get negative and irritated every now and again. This is part of being human. This is why I got reborn here in the first place. If I didn't have that anger, didn't have negativity, I wouldn't be a human being. I'd be somewhere else, much nicer here. So you accept that. Accept that you are at that stage. But at the same time, try a little bit to develop yourself away from that negativity and aversion. And of course, again, often in daily life when you are stressed out, you've got many things to do, it's hard to do anything about it. And anger arises, and once it is arisen, it's very difficult to get rid of it again. It's very hard. So often you have to catch it straight away. So the best thing to do is to do, you know, a bit of loving-kindness meditation, a bit of compassion. Enhance your peace in the morning before you go off to work so that you feel peaceful. If you feel peaceful, your mindfulness will be stronger, and you will be more able to catch that anger before it really arises in your mind. So use those little skillful means. Of course, other skillful means are don't act on that anger. This is, of course, much more important. If you do feel negative, if you do feel irritated, try to avoid acting on it. Because then you just, that's when you really go wrong, if you start acting on those negative mind states. So it is difficult, and the spiritual path is not, it's not something which is incredibly easy. It can't be that. It's just, I think that is just what we all know. We are trying to change ourselves. And it's difficult to change oneself. It's not easy. Everybody finds that difficult. And that's why we should have a lot of compassion on other people and also on ourselves. Because the way we got born into this world is to a large extent what we carry with us. It's like the baggage from past lives. And it's not easy to change that. We try, we do our best, and we succeed to some extent, but not always. Any more comments? Yeah. 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 Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's true because it's painful, you know. If you're always pushing yourself, always pushing the mind this and that direction, it just hurts, you know. It's a kind of type of suffering, if you're always kind of pushing yourself along here. And of course, a lot of the meditation practice is precisely about not pushing so much, not controlling so much. So you can see that straight away, that because it is about not controlling so much, not pushing so much, if that mindfulness is not natural, then it will often not work. It will not actually give rise to good meditation. It will actually, because it's a habit, you know, pushing and pulling the mind is also a kind of habit. And if you get into that habit, it's very hard to turn off just when you sit down to meditate. Habits are ingrained, they tend to stick, and you can't just turn it off. So that's why the natural mindfulness is far, far superior. And you could be right. I think even you're right. If you really push yourself too hard, force that mindfulness, it can even be detrimental. Because if it's painful, if we are in pain, we get angry much more easily. We get irritated much more easily. We get much more desires much more easily, because you want to get away from that pain. So it can almost have the opposite effect. It actually makes you less mindful. Because you want to escape the sense of control which is painful inside of you. So, yes, it's a good point. So it's much better to have a natural mindfulness than having this controlling thing.
Ah. Upatipanno Bhagavan.